Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stripajczyk. In this episode, we'll feature an excerpt of a recent roundtable about Chicago police torture with a group of Chicago political activists and relatives of torture victims. But now, a collection of recent news about media and democracy from the show Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey.
Oscar will have plenty to be grouchy about if bills in Congress become law. Three bills are circulating that could cut or even entirely eliminate federal funding for public broadcasting. That's right, it may be bye-bye Big Bird if some lawmakers get their way. NPR and PBS could be on the chopping block, as well as hundreds of other stations that make up the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Conservatives have long tried to slash support for public media, but their ideas are finding a more receptive audience under the guise of NPR's firing of news analyst Juan Williams and the need to balance the federal budget. Congressman Doug Lamburn, a Republican from Colorado, who introduced one of the bills, said public media can, quote, stand on its own feet. In response to the attacks, public stations across the country have started a campaign called 170 Million Americans to remind people of the benefits of public media. Jeff Nelson, Managing Director for Public Strategies for Minnesota Public Radio, reflects on the potential cuts.
To be brutally honest, losing federal funding for public broadcasting would be catastrophic.
In 2010, the U.S. spent $400 million on public media, or about $1.30 per person. In comparison, the British government spent $86 per capita. Nelson said that even with a small budget, our public media system offers programming and local news that commercial media ignore.
Public broadcasting is a crucial source of programming that really is responsive to citizens, not to advertisers. And what that means is that we can go more in depth when it comes to news coverage. It means that we can play bands that nobody else is playing.
Public media receive a majority of their budgets from donations from their audience and grants. But Nelson said support from the government provides the basis for private funding.
We've created a very robust public broadcasting system with very, very little federal money. So if we take that federal money away, you're pulling apart the sweater.
What is it about a 78-year-old widow that Fox News commentator Glenn Beck finds so terrifying? The object of the shock jock's irrational fear du jour is Frances Fox Piven, a distinguished professor and scholar of grassroots activism at the Graduate Center, City University of New York, who has spent her life writing about the poor and unemployed. For the past year, Beck has attacked Piven and her late husband, Richard Cloward.
Cloward and Piven, because you got to collapse the industrialized civilization.
Why is Beck so obsessed? Largely because of an article Piven and Cloward wrote 45 years ago. The article published in The Nation proposed that people on the left help poor people in the cities get their full benefits from welfare. Spurned on by Beck's sustained haranguing, his followers have posted death threats against Piven on his website, and he made no effort to remove them until recently, since he's come under scrutiny for these bizarre attacks. Piven was surprised to hear herself described as a violent revolutionary who wants to bankrupt the country's economic system. On a recent episode of Democracy Now!, Piven sloughed off Beck's calling her a commie revolutionary.
I think I'm a Democrat. I think that all of my work has been devoted to remedying the flaws, the distortions in American democracy.
The Center for Constitutional Rights, worried for Piven's safety, called upon Fox News to stop Beck from spewing false accusations against the professor. The network responded by saying that Beck specifically denounces violence and honestly portrays Piven's work. Eric Bollert of Media Matters for America disagrees. He says Beck's stock in trade is incendiary demonization, and Beck has taken lots of liberties to demonize Piven and tell a false story, but is savvy enough to stop just short of specifically calling for violence.
He just
creates this hysteria. The country is being destroyed right before your eyes. Progressives are robbing our freedoms. They're going to drive the economy into the ground. They're going to take over the government. America is going to be a communist and or socialist country. And his message is do something. Stop these people.
While nobody is calling for censorship of Fox News, Bollert points to a recent survey that shows the channel is the country's least trusted news source, owing in no small part to the efforts of watchdogs who shed light on the deception.
You have to just sort of continue to monitor it, continue to call out the lies, even though it becomes exhausting. I mean, at some point, it happens slowly, but I think there will become a realization, even within the Beltway Press, that Fox News is not legitimate and Fox News is not in the news business.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchuk. We now feature an excerpt of a recent roundtable about Chicago police torture with a group of Chicago political activists and relatives of torture victims. The roundtable, more than 70 minutes long, was recorded on Sunday, January 9, 2011, and offered commentary related to the January 2011 sentencing of former Chicago police officer and convicted torturer John Burge and related issues. The full audio of the roundtable is online at www.szczz.org. The following excerpt featured two community activists, Tamika Irby and Mark Clements, and three relatives of torture victims, Armanda Shackelford, Michelle Martin Howard, and Berta Escamilla.
There are three other things I'd like to touch on regarding all the points that you raised and everyone has raised, and thank you all for doing this. It actually touches on, I have a possible reason why Republicans are actually better on the question of torture than Democrats might be. I think it may be the here's my guess. The fact that within Chicago, a predominantly Democratic city, that if a Republican is touted as being, you know, a judge or in a position of power, that public opposition tends to spike up and increase. And it's that public pressure, whether it would be toward a Republican or a Democrat, that actually is at play here regarding whether or not a judge rules favorably regarding one or another case. And Democrats being seen as better, and maybe they are, slightly. But nonetheless, without that public pressure because they think, oh, Democrats are better, then less public pressure means harsher sentences because there's not really a measure of public accountability on that. What do you think about this? Is this an off-the-wall theory, or am I on the mark, or somewhere in between? Any idea?
Sounds about right.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, this is Mark Clements again. That is exactly right. And it is exactly right due to the fact that the Republican Party under the jurisdiction of Cook County, they have always been basically the ones that are treated as the stepbrother. Mm-hmm. They have never been given the true recognition that they feel that they deserve. I'm not an advocate of the Republican Party by any mean, but if these people are doing us right, I believe that is what this nation and what the people would want, is to be treated fair, to be treated like human beings and not like animals. So here it is, we have lived under the regime of the Democratic Party here in Cook County, I think, if my memory serves me correct, since 1945. Since the end of the Depression, we have been under the Democratic Party under particular mayors, and we have always been mistreated by the police department. There, we were segregated in the homes and houses which we could purchase. We were segregated in the courtroom system, segregated in the prison system. These conditions, believe it or not, still occur, and is being covered up now, not necessarily by Caucasians, but by the own color of your skin, African-American people, because they are afraid of losing their jobs from the mayor, they are covering this stuff up, causing mothers like Miss Shackelford to suffer, causing wives like Michelle Howard to suffer, causing mothers also like Bertha to now have to deal with the trauma of her son getting out of prison and has to battle to just get a job. Right. These conditions must stop. This is not an America that I believe in by any means, because I was told that America was of opportunity. This is not an opportunity where that you're being victimized for things that you should not have done. Hell, even if they committed the crimes, they were not supposed to be taken to no police station, chained up to no walls, and beat.
The second thing I'd like to raise before we wrap up has to do with the role of the media involved in all of this. And this could be a very long discussion, but I'd like to try to keep it somewhat abbreviated. pardon me. What coverage about this that I've seen tends to be, although you'll sometimes see an article, usually after some kind of high-profile exoneration, or certainly when Burge himself has been on trial, you'll see huge articles in the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times, for example. But nonetheless, the activism to bring him to account got precious little play within the corporate media. It's usually within outlets like the Chicago Reader, which do a front page story every now and again, but nonetheless, they're at least doing something about it. I mean, just as we're recording this, Jessica Popovac, a longtime Chicago area journalist, wrote an article regarding prisons and the role of keeping people who've been jailed for an extremely long time to the point where it's now not cost-effective to keep them when they're in their 80s, for example. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, you'll find articles like that. You'll find interviews like this, but they're on community radio or university radio. They won't be on like WLS or WGN radio or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of independent voice. And the internet, I think, has also been helping to help to serve as a kind of tool. But it seems like that to me that the role of an independent media and an independent press in helping to build that kind of momentum that can lead to some justice, it seems like has been critical about this. Has this been in your experience as well?
Yes.
Bertha Escamilla.
Yes, I feel that there's only attention only on certain cases, okay? Sometimes you hear about it and sometimes you don't. And I think it's because they're trying to hide a lot of information that comes out. At one time, you would hear, as I said, this must have happened like in the year 2000, 2001, when there was a series going on of cases that were unraveled, and that led to Maurice, what's his name?
Patterson.
The newspaper reporter
Maurice Posley,
and Stephen Armstrong, I think it is.
No, Ken.
Ken Armstrong. I'm sorry. It was good that they were able to do series like that and were able to keep people aware of what police officers were capable of doing and what was happening to innocent people that have spent time in prison for being wrongfully convicted. They're not really putting out a lot of that information. I don't know why, but I'm sure it's because they don't want people like us to know, or they don't want people like out there in the suburbs or any place else to know how bad it is with the police. I mean, again, like Tamika was saying, you know, they're not all bad. You know, thank God for that. But the majority are bad. And I don't think that they would want to put out reports on police officers who have had suspensions or anything in that source to keep people aware of what these police officers do. They really want to keep that undercover. And I just feel that that's wrong, but it's because they don't want people to know that there's other people that may have the same police officers that could maybe do something with that. I'm glad for people like John Conroy from The Reader,
yes,
who was out there for a long time, who did stories on Andrew Wilson and Burge and other police officers and judges and other stories. Keith Walker, he did a story on Keith Walker. He was the one who really kept it going out there and made it public. And we're lucky for him to have done this. I mean, he was able to see that how prosecutors who became judges later on, and they don't want people like that to know that, but that's the truth. Prosecutors are the ones who are prosecuting you and send you to prison and then later on become judges. That is really something that they should stop doing.
There's another, at least in my mind, institutional reason as to why journalists may want to curry favor with police, to use police as a kind of easy source, mm-hmm. especially for information, for coverage. And if you burn that bridge, that could make your job conceivably a lot tougher, even though in some respects it actually may be better.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Clemens, you had some thoughts.
You are exactly right, and that is what Steve Mills, Ken Armstrong, Maurice Posley done. They exposed the system.
Mm-hmm.
John Conroy did the same thing as with the Reader. Well, today, Maurice Posley is a journalist at the University of Stanford, okay? He was basically let go by the Chicago Tribune.
Right.
Ken Armstrong was let go by the Chicago Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Mills is doing some work that amounts to basically counting the newspapers that's being sent out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
John Conroy was terminated because they say he costs too much. So this is the scheme. These were highly decorative, meaning people who was given great awards of achievement in journalists.
Mm-hmm.
They were acknowledged by the highest peers of this state, the government of this state, not only the government of this state, the president of the United States, meaning the most likely candidate to give them an acknowledgement, and that was George Bush. So, you mean to tell me that someone who is doing their job and exposing the core of the problem, you let them go? That tells me that it's something in the inner circle as to what our previous governor tried to achieve, which was Rob Pogorich. What he tried to achieve was he went to the editor of the Tribune and demanded that the editor, Bruce Dobb, that he be fired.
Mm-hmm.
See, so you have to raise questions. Did this occur to Mills, Posley, and Armstrong? Because who would terminate the core of their staff? They were the core, the investigative journalists that even they broke the tortures,
right,
along with John Conroy. So you fire them? That don't make common sense to me. And I believe that it is some type of conspiracy to have got rid of these individuals.
It could also be the fact that, remember that, and this is kind of dealing a little bit off topic, but I know a little bit something about this. the economics regarding newspapers in the United States, where they basically have been cutting staff to the bone. There hasn't been much investigative work. The Tribune has actually been in bankruptcy since December 2008. And how that happened was actually a long story involving the Tribune gambling their future on continued growth. And yet they got stopped actually by activists I had been involved with at the that were working at the Federal Communications Commission to block key rules that they wanted to have implemented. They couldn't. That basically resulted in a change of ownership, which ultimately led to a bankruptcy, which is now still going on. I mean, there are now four different competing groups of shareholders that have now been firing. Meanwhile, the Tribune's numbers have been, you know, steadily sinking like a rock. Hardly any staff, at least as before. People like these journalists have been working on cases like this. Are basically got let go or demoted or other things. But nonetheless, it's not like a matter of necessarily a conspiracy. There, it's like one friend of mine who I know says, it's not a conspiracy, it's business as usual. Hmm. And kind of regarding media about this. But the major media in the United States have shot themselves in the foot big time regarding this stuff, especially where, in the great irony, you know, I'll buy a newspaper if it's talking about important stories like this.
Right.
I'm not going to do it if they're going to be talking about fluff.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, you're a newspaper. Report some news, please.
Exactly.
I might actually buy it.
Right. I agree.
You might actually be able to, you know, run a profitable product. Everyone wins.
Let us know what is actually going on.
Amen. The last question here. What would you say to people who are interested in this topic, who would want to get involved and offer help in whatever way? Amanda.
I would like for them to talk up.
Who are they?
Whoever they are. I can't call no name, but if something that you know and some of your family members was harmed in some kind of way, let the people know about it. Let somebody know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like I think Mark was saying, these were poor people.
Yeah.
That they did this too.
Yeah.
And like myself, I didn't have no money.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that.
Right.
So they took advantage of that.
They see you as an easy target.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. But, and see, that's not fair. You know, mm-hmm. you, like I was saying earlier, you're supposed to be doing a job.
Mm-hmm.
Do it properly. Do it the way it's supposed to be done. Get out there and do some footwork and get it done. Don't just pick on a person. Because you tired. Like
Bertha
mm-hmm.
was saying about her son. This officer said that he was tired and he wanted to get it done now. But then, if you're not sure, why you want to rush it? Why don't you do it the right way? You wouldn't want that to happen to your family member. So why you want to do it to somebody else's? That's wrong. And it shouldn't have never started, but it needs to stop. And I would think that people that's paying out all this money to people look like you would think, is something wrong if we got to continue to say we're running out of funds. We are broke because we can't pay enough bus drivers.
Mm.
We don't have enough money. But then, if you didn't have to pay for that person getting beat to death, that money could still be there.
Sure.
The school system, just about every year, they don't have enough funds to cover for the teachers. Teachers are getting laid off. The students need those teachers. But then if you don't take that money that you done paid that person over there, cause he done got beat, that money could go for those teachers in that school. Those are different things that's going on in the school. So much of it now has discontinued cause they can't afford it. But these are our students. That's our tomorrow.
Tamika Irby.
I would like to see more victim rights groups get involved because, again, John Birch victims are crime victims, victims of crime, and they really need to get involved, and people need to recognize them as crime victims. Also, I would say that a lot of our community, people in the community need to stand up and take a stand. It's very, very, very crucial for this whole, around this whole issue, and not just torture issues, but like Mrs. Shackelford was saying, like schools and all type of stuff. We're too lax. We need to get up, take a stand, and come to one of our meetings. Mm-hmm. Joe John Birch Coalition.
Michelle Martin.
Well, I agree with what Tamika was saying also. I believe that the communities need to step up. We as the people need to step up and do what we need to do in our communities to make them better. She talking about the schools, Ms. Shackelford. She's talking about the schools. All that goes into one with the community. If the community step up, like all these activists, if we all just step up, come out in the open, stop being behind doors talking about what needs to be done, come out into the open and say how we really feel about the police officers, about the governor, about the state's attorneys, about Lisa Mannequin, Anita Alvarez, all of these people that's covering up all these crimes. If we step up to the plate and do what we're supposed to do as a community, I believe things will start changing.
Bertha Escamilla.
Yes, I'm just asking people to come out, to step forward. If this is not happening to you, it can. I don't care where you live, who you are, it can happen to you. I've never heard of John Birch or any of this. I never thought any of this was going on. I lived in the suburbs. I would see it in the news that innocent people would be getting beat up by cops, and I always wondered, why were they getting beat up? You would see their photos on TV, their hair is sticking up, or they would have bruises in their face, and I never understood why. Well, I understand now. And as I said, it can happen to you. For the Latino families, I believe that a lot of people are afraid because they're afraid they may get sent back to Mexico or that they would do something to you. I think a lot of families are afraid to do some things like that, is to step up. And I just want to say that if you don't step up, it will happen to you or could happen to you. And we need more people to come out. You know, John Birch or any of these other things that have changed just did not change because they wanted to all of a sudden decide, well, we're going to put video cameras out, or, you know, all of a sudden John Birch is going to get found guilty or whatever. It happened because of people like us that are sitting here. I've been out there for 18 years, and it's because of people like us that made things happen, and but we need more.
Mark Cummins.
Well, in closing, I believe definitely, and I will echo off of what everyone has stated, I am definitely in support of what Ms. Shackelford has stated, and that's something that I've preached for some time, is that if the money is not used inappropriately, then they would have money for the CTA. They will have money for the schools to be able to afford computers. We need the people to understand that it's now time to get involved. On January 20th, John Birch will be sentenced to whatever amount of time that he is sentenced to. But there's more corrupt officers that are on the Chicago police force that needs to be exposed, need to be kicked off of the police force, and
prosecuted.
Right, and prosecuted. We need the people to get up, and I can't say that enough. We need the people to get up. Thank you.
Amanda Shackelford, Tamika Irby, Michelle Martin, Howard Berta Escamilla, Mark Clemens. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.